On December 11, 2020, Montana State Senator for the 33rd District, J.P. Pomnikowski, spoke at an online Friday forum about the current situation in Montana and the upcoming session of the legislature in 2021. She is introduced by Paula Baswick.
Thanks for joining us for our fourth Friday Forum of the season. I'm Paula Baswick, and I'm a volunteer member of the Friday Forum Committee. Friday Forum was formerly part of Wonderlust, but it is now an Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at MSU program sponsored by the Bozeman Public Library Foundation. To learn more about the other OLLI upcoming courses, side trips, book discussions, and other programs, go to montana.edu/wonderlust. The committee is hard at work on the 2021 programs and will be tackling such topics as sustainability, independent press, the economics of marijuana, and we have some other ideas yet. So please stay tuned on those. JP, a state senator from District 33, will provide insight into Montana's upcoming legislative session. She is a champion of working across the aisle, striving to find common ground and drafting laws that will serve all Montanans. She started her service in the House of Representatives in 2007 and was elected to the Montana Senate in 2014, where she currently serves as the Democratic Party whip. If there were Bobcat football games going this fall, you'd also find her in the booth doing stats, I believe, is what you've been doing, right, JP? For many, 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 many years. Before we get to JP, you'll see a 6-minute video that she did for Pachachka, explaining our legislative process. If you have seen this video before, I encourage you to watch again because you will refresh your knowledge and or maybe find some things that you had forgotten about or you'll learn something different. I know I've watched it a couple of times now, and it seems like I learn something new every single time.
Well, I might just take this opportunity to thank you so much for the invitation. I really appreciate the invite from Osher Lifelong Learning Institute and from the Bozeman Public Library Foundation. I'm a big fan of both. I've presented previously at Wonderlust, and I'm just delighted to be back speaking with you. I will try to give as much insight as I can. There's a lot still unknown about the session, but thank you for the invitation. And I really look forward to questions. I'd like to be able to try to answer whatever anyone has to ask. I'm glad that we're going to start with this Pachachka presentation that I did, and it describes the typical structure of a legislative session. But this session, this upcoming session, we have a wrench in the works, and that is a global pandemic, an increasing caseload and number of hospitalizations and deaths from COVID-19. And so usually this time of year, on the doorstep of the next session, we are working on legislation, offices, places to live temporarily in Helena, that kind of thing. This time, we're trying to determine if we can get enough PPE for staff in the Capitol. We're trying to determine how to responsibly distance people, how to ask or more stridently recommend. I don't know how to say that. So job one will be dealing with the public health crisis. And job two then is legislating. They really must happen both at the same time, although they don't have to, and I'll describe that later. Thanks.
Montana has a citizen legislature. Regular citizens serve as your lawmakers. None of us are professional politicians. We are ranchers, nurses, teachers, lawyers, pipe fitters, ranchers, computer geeks, ranchers, really a lot of ranchers. Of the three branches of government, the legislature is the branch closest to the people. It's the branch of the people. The great thing about the legislature is that anyone, any of us can be a legislator. And the unfortunate thing about the legislature is that anyone can be a legislator. 100 in the House of Representatives, 50 in the State Senate, meet in Helena every 2 years for a regular legislative session that lasts no more than 90 days, after which we come back to our regularly scheduled lives with additional responsibilities as elected officials. For January through the end of April, we leave our families, our careers, our friends and neighbors, our pets. That's my kitty cat, Bitsy. We move to Helena and we meet 6 days a week, and together decide what will become state law that applies to everyone in Montana. We take an oath of office and then get 3 committee assignments for committee meetings that go sometimes 8, 10, 12 hours a day, sometimes longer, in which we listen to individual citizens, lobbyists, staff, state agencies, everyone, considering ideas in the form of bills. We each become experts in the subjects and policy considered in our respective committees. The learning curve is steep. Some describe the process of learning about state laws and legislative process, about state agencies and how rules are implemented, like trying to drink from a fire hose. And then we consider individual bills. A bill is an idea for a law. It's an idea. In Montana, each bill proposes one single issue. Last session, more than 2,471 bills were requested, 1,187 considered on issues like school funding, beer and wine licenses, farmers markets, everything. Some legislators bring their own ideology and ideas for laws, but many more bring your ideas. We hear everything from very weighty issues like nuclear power to far more lighthearted ideas like hunting with spears or naming a state dinosaur or a state soil. You might think making policy is dry and boring, but it isn't. It can be agonizing. The devil is in the details. We consider specific and difficult issues. How much mercury is allowed in your drinking water? Whether 10-year-olds can hunt without taking a hunter safety course? Whether buffalo should be shot if they leave Yellowstone? But our only constitutional duty in that regular session is to pass a balanced budget for the state for the next 2 years. State government lives within its means, just like your household does. We passed a $10 billion budget for 2016-17. This 4-inch binder is one bill, House Bill 2, the state budget. Only during session, remember that's for no more than 90 days every 2 years, each Montana legislator receives a fabulous salary of $82.64 a day. Don't spend it all in one place. And per diem, $112, which pays for that rental place in Helena. We don't do it for the money. And we cannot be career politicians. And not just because of, at most, $7,400 salary every 2 years. We have term limits, no more than 8 years in the House or Senate in a 16-year period. The House averages 30 new people every session, a 30% turnover. You should participate in your citizen legislature. You may not think of yourself as political. I never thought I'd be in politics either. But each of us has life experience, professional expertise, enthusiasm for an issue. Remember that legislators are not experts on all subjects. We need to hear from you. You care about your kids' school and teachers. Maybe you care about hunting and fishing in your favorite spots, or about a loved one fighting cancer who wants to participate in a drug trial, or about dog breeds. Policy about all of this is made at the state level. You should participate because your state representative may have the exact opposite political beliefs as you do. Do you trust that person to vote your interests? Can you have a conversation with your representative or senator? You can encourage us to vote on an issue and not hold fast to philosophical or political differences. If you doubt your power as an individual, don't. In some hearings, hundreds of people come to testify or to fill the Capitol to show support for an issue or to oppose an issue. You can find your own legislator in the hallways and tell him or her your position. Nicely, please. If you don't speak up, silence implies consent. And if not the state legislature, participate or serve you, yourself, more locally. Our Bozeman School Board, the city or county commission, service or fraternal organizations, work or school groups, you can work on policy and not necessarily be in politics. I personally kind of progressed to the legislature. First, I became part of my neighborhood association, then served on the Bozeman Planning Board and the Zoning Commission. I went to the legislature to testify on a bill. I made a suggestion that ended up in the bill and realized that I'd just written state law and that even I could be a legislator. I love the work of the legislature. I love the policy, not the politics. After the regular session, helping constituents, you, and working on policy has become my full-time volunteer job. I get calls all the time on everything from water rights to voter registration, healthcare, that I should change my hairstyle. I hope I've given you a face to put to the name of the state legislature. And please know that most of us, most, are feeling, thinking, caring human beings just trying to do what's right for a state full of ranchers, lawyers, accountants, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Bobby. I hope that gave everyone a basic refresher of the state legislature, when we meet, how we meet, what we consider, and that we are the state lawmaking body. I really love that we are a citizen legislature. I think that really informs our policies very well. When you have members who are ranchers and teachers and nurses, then when bills come up on ranching or nursing or teaching, there are people who know just intrinsically the pitfalls and the benefits of a policy that's being proposed. I really think it's a great way to reflect what we want in our laws. It is a little more difficult that our legislature is a biennial, a meeting every 2 years, body, but that is a good control. So most other states, I think there are only, I want to say 5, 6, 7 states that still do a biennial session. Almost all the others are full-time. That is a full-time legislature. That is professional politicians. I really like that we're a little bit more grassroots, homegrown. And that is not to say not intelligent or experienced. We are very intelligent, quite experienced. But I really like that we all come from a certain perspective, and really that informs a lot of the policy that we talk about. The pre-session activities, you may have read some of this in the paper lately, include the adoptions of rules. We are deep in the heart. Holy cats, are we getting wrapped around the axle on rules right now? It's also committee assignments. It's assigning committee chair persons. People are working on legislation to be introduced as soon as we call to order in January. So a lot of that pre-session work is happening now. This time, it includes, as I had mentioned, just as an introduction, a lot of the protocols we would like to see around COVID protections. Democrats and Republicans who serve on the Rules Committee have met, and we will meet again next week. And our job is to propose the bills. The rules are proposed to the body just as any other bill is. It's just that it's almost the first bill. It's one of the first bills to be presented because those are the rules under which we will operate. So the rules this time are considering public health protocols. In the Rules Committee earlier this week, Democrats proposed an entirely virtual session. We have been conducting our legislative meetings virtually since the stay-at-home order in March. We have done this now for 9 months, either on WebEx or Zoom or another platform much like this. We take public comment. We vote. We make motions and vote. We have robust discussions. We have presentations by agency staff, by lobbyists, by people who want to share information with us. We can meet remotely, and we have been for quite some time. Just by the way, our meeting minutes for the past several sessions have been electronic anyway. They've been video and audio, and those are the official minutes of the legislature. So we are in line right now conducting our sessions remotely with the electronic minute taking of all of our proceedings. And you can go back and look at archived meetings. After we proposed a virtual session, we also proposed delaying. So the presentation mentioned that the Constitution requires that we accomplish just one thing in the session, that is to pass a balanced budget. There are other constitutional requirements of the legislature, one of which is that we call to order. The Constitution states that the legislature calls to order on the first Monday after the first of the year. This year, that's January 4th. We can call to order using remote participation. And I think some of our members will call to order in that way. But then we could recess, especially to try to get through the worst projected months of COVID infection and influenza. We've been told that the winter months will be the worst, and the Capitol is already, you may have read this too, it already is a petri dish. Everyone who visits the Capitol in the legislative session touches every single, the same doorknob, the same handrail, the same chair back. Everyone gets sick already, as it is. Throw into that coronavirus, and we just know that we must address the public health crisis. So we proposed a virtual session. We proposed calling to order as is required and then delaying. We also have proposed a hybrid session where some people may attend in person in the Capitol if we can honor public health protocols like face masks, social distancing, frequent cleaning, limiting the number of people in the Capitol at a time. And that is also under consideration. We heard this past week, and I was able to confirm with our Secretary of the Senate that our Republican members plan to be in the Capitol in person. Many of them don't wear face masks. So we are trying to determine, for the safety of the public and staff, for lobbyists, for our members, that those who wish to participate remotely may. And this is our first big hill to climb. The next thing, as if the work of the legislature were not enough, now we've got the pandemic to worry about. The work also is weighty. It's everything from passing a state budget. You saw that in the presentation. That takes up the entire session from day one to the very last breath on the last day, practically. The budget is the undercurrent that takes up the whole thing. Other policy decisions are happening at the same time, and the policy committees consider those. And this session, I'll start to get into what we expect to see some this session. The Republican majority has been in place in the legislature, in the Senate and House, since 2011. And so it is a Republican budget that has passed since 2011. It is Republican-shaped. It's been a Republican majority. And this year, we have Governor-elect Gianforte, Republican governor. So for some of the bills that passed in previous sessions that were passed by the Republican majority legislature and vetoed by the governor, we already see bill drafts for those policy ideas to come forward again. They include things like guns just about everywhere. Some of the vetoed titles that are back are revising concealed carry regulations, allowing legislators to conceal carry on state property, meaning in the Capitol. I can tell you, emotions can run high in the Capitol, and armed only with our words, in my opinion, that is the only thing we should be armed with. Handgun laws pertaining to federal property, meaning federal courtrooms or federal buildings. Concealed weapons laws, again, allowing suppressors for the hunting of mountain lions and wolves. So if you were missing any hunting regulations, there it is. There are lots of other proposals. Medicaid expansion passed two sessions ago. And that there are titles that would limit the qualification for Medicaid coverage. There are bill drafts for marijuana, controlling alcohol, allowing vaping. Recently, there was a ballot initiative on your ballot that passed that would limit local jurisdictions like your city or town from passing its own ordinances against certain things. So for instance, against flavored e-cigarette or vaping flavors that appeal to youth, that we don't want to start vaping, allowing local governments to set their own firearm restrictions, right? Please no firearms in City Hall, for instance. And we expect to see bills that would overturn that. There are bill drafts on abortion laws, voting registration laws. Right now, Montana is, I am just so proud that Montana fully complies with the Help America Vote Act, where we have same-day registration. We ask all campaign long for people, please vote, don't forget to vote, please come out on election day and vote. And we have same-day registration. There are bill drafts in to restrict or close voting registration and to repeal same-day. There are some from legislators that have a particular focus. So just as an example, one of the new incoming members in the House has bill drafts. And see if you can pick up on a theme here. allow for the snaring of wolves by licensed trappers, increase the length of harvest season for wolves, add wolves to big game combo licenses, allow for hunting of wolves at night. So we'll see a lot of bills on wolves and bison and everything else. I know there must be questions, and so I really just wanted to give a flavor about the two big things that the session is trying to get its hands around right now. Rules that allow for the public health crisis and public health, and the activity and the business of the legislature. I'm happy to answer any questions, and I appreciate so much the invitation. Thank you again.
Okay, JP, we do have a couple of questions. Capitals recently with armed takeover and in Michigan and the anti-mask protest in Idaho. What is your confidence level that the session will go smoothly given your intro about COVID and all of these gun bills that are apparently going to be coming up?
Thank you, Paula. Your video and audio kind of froze up, but I think I get the gist of the question. Concern about armed protests in the Capitol and people wanting to participate and how we might conduct the session with COVID protocols. Is that about it?
What's your level of confidence that it will all go smoothly given those two?
I give it about 10%. It's not going to be smooth. I expect that we will just bump up against, and I'm sorry, I just quite candidly, this is an ideology issue. It is not so much a public health issue or a public's right to participate, which is freedom of speech. Please don't bring your gun to the Capitol and demand to be heard. I'm happy to hear you without not at the barrel of a gun. We could have decided a lot of this in rules committee meetings this past fall, this late summer, really, August, September. And that's typically when we do shape a lot of this policy. I mean, this is a public health crisis. It's not a legislative opinion crisis. And yet, what are we talking about? Ideology. And what people will or will not do. And so I would expect that we will pass rules that have to do with how we conduct our proceedings and not how we will protect public health, and that we will call to order and there will be people in the Capitol and there will be an outbreak and we will need to quarantine for 2 weeks. And I don't know if we shut the whole thing down or if those of us who are not sick, very sick, can conduct our business with remote participation. I don't know. I think we're going to feel it out as it goes. And I wish dearly that I hope that we get to an agreement earlier than that. I know the public wants it. I want it. I've heard from lobbyists who they don't want to come to the Capitol. So my level of confidence, I'm sorry to say, is low. I hope that I can report better news next week after the Rules Committee meeting. Fingers crossed.
Thank you. Next question. Do you see any opportunities for common ground where progress could be made, particularly on climate change, but other issues as well?
Yes, I do. I do. And I try not to sound Pollyanna when I say this, but there is ideology from every legislator, but there is also a majority, a working majority of Democrats and Republicans. You've heard, I'm sure, a reference to the Solutions Caucus, which are typically more moderate Republicans who help us, I guess you can, you know, we together help to pass a budget, we pass policy. But this time, I really do expect some of the ideological bills to come forward and pass. With regard to climate change, we have had some bills in past sessions that recognize that, for instance, a warming climate and warmer temperatures and a longer growing season lends itself well in Montana to pulse crops. But pulse crops typically are more thirsty. And the time that a pulse crop is in, as opposed to a wheat crop, which is not quite as thirsty, is when water is least available. It's the height of summer. So we have talked about, we've passed laws to really establish and protect agricultural water rights, pulse crop benefits.
What's a pulse crop?
So typically we grow wheat or barley or grains, and that pulls a lot of nitrogen out of the soil. A pulse crop is planted in the next year, off year, And it is typically soybeans or lentils or something that fixes nitrogen into the soil. So you're growing a different product on the same ground and you're restoring the nitrogen that a wheat crop pulls off. I'm sorry, I should have said. And Montana has had great success with this. Peas. Peas are also a pulse crop. And we do very well with pulse crops. It really has been a boon to our agricultural community that had trouble with nitrogen absent soil or nitrogen loss soil. So that's an example, but the way we get there is to recognize, well, and then we recognize there are things we can't say. I can't say climate change. I can say longer growing season. I can say growing temperatures later into the year, right? So we get there in a different way, but we have come together for some policies like that. The larger policies about, say, vehicle emission standards or promoting renewable energy, I think the way we're going to get there is to talk about the market, right? A lot of this is market driven. Coal is market driven, and it is expensive power now. It's expensive. Montana is an energy and a food producer, and we produce energy in all different ways. I love that we have a really broad portfolio of different types of energy. We have wind and solar and geothermal and traditional methods. So it's all in our portfolio. I love that we could expand that. So really, it's talking about what we can provide for profit, for the energy needs. And I know this is kind of a long rambling answer, but those are the kind of things we talk about and the ways in which we talk about them. There will be some policies that I will oppose that just don't recognize that we need to address climate change and all of its effects.
What can we do if a law passes and the governor signs it that we, the editorial we, think is horrible? Can we do a lawsuit and get the Montana Supreme Court involved?
Yes. What you can do is during the legislative hearings, please speak up. As I said in the intro, silence implies consent. So if there is something that is a bad idea, please tell legislators this is a bad idea. You have every right, and I hope you do participate in the process. If a bill passes, one of the considerations is that there has to be an entity that has legal standing to then oppose that or bring legal action about it. And we already have ideas that, you know, some of the bills that are coming forward around, say, labor or pensions or something like that, we have some of our labor groups who are looking at those, and they would then have standing to challenge a new law in court. And a lot of that goes to precedent, right? There are court decisions and federal laws, federal rules too, that might buck up against what a state law says. So that is an option. Sometimes a bill will pass and it will not be able to be challenged in court. What you can do is work to get it changed in the next session. When a law passes, it can be really disappointing, really, really emotionally devastating, but it's not forever. One of the sayings at the state legislature is that forever is 2 years, because the next election is 2 years away. And if you don't like something, scream it from the rooftops, shout it from the rooftops, and then try to get it changed. We have 2 years. And not to say that bad things can happen in 2 years, they can, but we can make things right too.
And the next question is, does the county health department have any control over how the legislature functions?
This is a question that may actually end up in court. We have asked that same question. When the pandemic hit and county health departments were the ones to say, here are the public health safety protocols, everything that we know, everything we've been doing, stay 6 feet apart, wear a mask, wash your hands, don't touch your face, don't gather, not big gatherings of people. We know what to do. The question is that, so because the separation of powers in the Constitution and in statute says that the legislature may make rules for its own proceeding, then think of a county health department as, I mean, that is a certain jurisdiction, but the legislature is conducting state level business. And so it was determined, and this is what is a question. It was determined that we can set the rules for our own proceedings, and we can set a rule that says we won't wear masks. We will gather in groups of more than 10. which you saw some of the pictures of those committee rooms. Those were just the committees I showed you. Some of those committees are 24 people big, which is too big for a committee. Don't get me started on that. But honestly, but then, I mean, some of you have seen really big hearings that go for hours and have hundreds of people speaking to them. There are ways to handle that. But the determination is that the Capitol, we've said the Capitol is a public building. It should be protected by public health laws. But the rules for our own proceedings is in the separation of powers. We may challenge that. And just to say, just because we can set rules for our own proceedings, that means how are we going to schedule a bill? How will we hold a hearing? It does not mean that anyone has the right to infect someone else with a deadly virus.
I think your answer was no.
Yes, sorry. In short, no.
Sadly, yeah. No, I appreciate hearing all of the reasons behind the no. Next question. Told that the vote had been to placate ultra-conservative constituents in the full confidence that Governor Bullock would veto a bill, might the really fringe legislators exercise some self-discipline in this go-round since there will be no such vetoes?
No. I'm sorry, no. So one thing we have seen is that some of the bills that were vetoed are being drafted again. They will be introduced. And I don't know if Governor-elect Gianforte will veto them for other reasons, or if he will happily sign them. I don't know. I fully expect that they will be reintroduced.
What are they going to do with Medicaid in the middle of a pandemic and all of its problems? I'm assuming Medicaid problems.
So we do see bill drafts to change the qualifications for people to get Medicaid coverage. Medicaid expansion has provided health coverage for almost 100,000 Montanans now. And there are bill drafts that would make qualifications stricter for that. It would actually disqualify some people from that coverage. So again, we go to that to say, this is ideology versus just a human condition, right? If you are sick or injured and we know how to treat you and get you back to your productive life, that's what we should do. And that means paying for the care that is rendered. We want you healthy and well. And honestly, if people don't have Medicaid coverage or any health coverage for that matter, it's not that we won't treat them. It's that it's unpaid. Right? So it's uncompensated care. The rural hospitals, a lot of the rural providers, a lot of our critical care access hospitals came forward and said, please, legislators, conservative and liberal alike, we just need this for our communities. And whatever the ideology is, it shouldn't weigh in. So my hope is that when we see bills, and we will see them, that propose to restrict Medicaid qualification or other health coverage. I mean, just even under regular Medicaid, I think we've got a third of the state covered. I shouldn't say that. I'm not sure about the numbers, but it's a lot of people. And it's their health coverage that, just like you present your insurance card, that's the coverage. So it's compensated care. And my hope is that a lot of the champions for Medicaid expansion, and who had already been champions for Medicaid coverage and any other health coverage, Medicare or private insurance, whatever it is, would come forward to say, you know what, this is working. This is how we can stay open. This is compensated care. That's my hope.
So what do you feel is the reason the Democrats lost so badly in the last election is the question. And I would add, or I would flip it and say, what do you think is the impetus for the state going completely red?
You know, we've been trying to diagnose that. You've probably heard some of the same theories I have. One is that our supporters of President Trump just extended that support to every Republican on the ballot. Another theory is that Montana has received a lot of new residents, and some of them are coronavirus hotspot fleers, right? They've come to Montana because our caseload was not nearly as bad, but a lot of them have come from conservative hotspots. One of our candidates in the Flathead, who was running for a House seat, said he saw a lot of new people, new residents, new voters with license plates from Texas, Arkansas, really, you know, kind of the a more conservative Midwest or South Southern contingent. And so if those voters came to Montana and registered to vote, they have the same ideology from the place they left. And so that's another theory, is that, you know, someone supported President Trump and the Republican statewide candidates or federal candidates, and then voted Republican all the way down the ballot. And especially, I think that's especially true for new voters who don't know the people who are running. One great thing about Montana is that you get to know your elected officials. I go grocery shopping like anybody else. I can't make it out of the produce section in fewer than 45 minutes because people stop to talk to me, which I love. Honestly, I go produce shopping when I know I have some time. But if you move to a place and you don't know who you're voting for, I mean, and typically Montana voters are split ticket voters. I have voted a split ticket. Everyone I know practically has voted a split ticket if they've been here for a while, because you can get to know your candidates. And if there is someone running who more closely identifies with a Republican platform, but you like and trust that person, you vote for him or her. Same thing with Democrats. So Montanans are typically split ticket voters. I think new voters who don't know the candidates, or just haven't had the time to meet them, or don't know that they can, I think they perhaps rely on their party affiliation to guide them. That's just a best guess.
And what do you believe the major issues related to education, K through 12 and higher education?
The first will be public funding to private institutions. The two big issues for education will be the level of state funding, which used to be upwards of 70% and now is down around 30%. And the rest is through property taxes or, you know, private investment, whatever it is. And the rest will be public dollars that now go to a Montana public schools. I'm a proud product of Montana public schools, and that those dollars will be qualified to also fund private institutions. So that dilutes what each public institution can get. But we know that Governor-elect Gianforte supports that proposition, and some of our Republican colleagues do as well. So that's what I expect. I also expect that with the effect of COVID on our businesses, on our own work and hours of working, we just are not going to see the same level of dollars in the state budget. And so what we've been able to do in past sessions, in fact, I was in the, I think it was 2007 or 9, when for the first time in 20 years, we were able to negotiate with the Board of Regents that if we could fund what would what would be equivalent to a tuition freeze, would they honor that? Now, we had to just basically, it's a handshake deal, because once we appropriate dollars, it is up to the Board of Regents to allocate it. But we had that agreement. And so for the first time in 20 years, we were able to provide a tuition freeze for Montana University System students. I don't know that we will have the dollars to do that this time. I hope we will. And I hope that's where we put them. And we just know that there have been challenges there. But our public schools, too, have had, I mean, they need more devices. They need internet connection for their students. They need help with classrooms or class curriculum so that it accommodates people who are kids who are in for 2 days in-person learning, distanced and remote learning, all those kinds of things. So my dearest hope is that we recognize the value of our public education, shore it up. You know, we've already been to a special session in 2005 over not providing a quality public education. And we have started to come back from that. We've actually come back from that pretty well. I hope we don't backslide. That's my hope.
Okay, then this is another good segue in terms of backsliding. You mentioned fighting against bad bills. Are there any bills that you feel particularly problematic or threatening to you right now?
Yes. I know all of us have our own beliefs about women's rights and reproductive rights, but that is really fundamental. And if someone were to threaten your very control over your own body, I would expect you to battle against that. I would be shoulder to shoulder with you. And I expect a fight about that this session. Also for things like local governments and self-governing powers, there's another saying in the legislature, we love local control, except when we don't. And so if there is a policy or an ordinance, like a firearms prohibition or a vaping flavors prohibition that is passed by a local city or town, there have been previous sessions when legislators have not liked that a certain city or county has passed its own ordinance, which largely reflect, well, completely does reflect the will of its population and is part of its self-governing powers. But I expect that local control will be changed this session.
Spoken like a true politician, huh?
I'm sorry. I'm hopeful, but we've seen what the bill draft titles themselves tell the story.
So the next question, and you already sort of answered it, but if you want to expand on it at all, is what do you expect in terms of limits on women's reproductive rights?
So one of the bills that was vetoed was it's called the Montana Pain Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. What that means is abortion very early on, sometimes before a woman knows she might be pregnant, right? So there's 6 to 8 weeks when it's unknown. Your body's schedule is off, but it may or may not be a pregnancy. This bill has come forward and has been vetoed, I think, at least twice. And there are at least two bill drafts with that exact same title, and I'm confident that exact same language in it that will be introduced this time. And we know that Governor-elect Gianforte has expressed that he is a pro-life man, and I would expect that he would sign this bill. One thing I have said to Governor-elect Gianforte is that if we want to grow business in this state, if we want to attract the most talented workers and their families, then restricting people's personal rights is not going to do that. I would not move to a place to take a good job if all my other rights were restricted. And so I hope that there is some recognition in that, but I don't know. I think these bills are coming.
Switching gears a little bit, what is the strategy for protecting public lands in Montana?
We have had groundswells of support in previous sessions, huge rallies of hundreds and hundreds of people in the Capitol Rotunda during the session, standing in the galleries of each chamber in support of public lands. That is a Montana heritage. Our outdoor heritage is based on public lands and our access to public lands. The strategy is the same, to remind people that if you hunt or fish or hike or camp or birdwatch or collect leaves or whatever it is you do on public lands, that is the Montana outdoor heritage. And once we privatize or sell public lands, we don't get them back. That's something that we must protect. It's also important to remember that a lot of our public lands support our school funding. So there is a constitutional requirement that our public lands and the lands board is also made up of all of our statewide candidates, which are now all Republicans. So it will be worthwhile to remind our statewide office holders that their duty also is to school funding. So what we do is we let grazing leases or timber leases, or in some cases, mining or drilling on our public lands. And the proceeds from that go to fund our public schools. So if those lands were privatized, I think that also threatens our school funding. But basically, it's outdoor tradition and the funding for the schools of the state.
What's your confidence level?
Our public lands will be attacked, as they have been. But largely, when we talk to groups, and it doesn't much matter if you are conservative or liberal, if you are a hunter, you've got your sweet spot that you go to and that's where you like. Right? That's where you're successful. That's a family tradition. That seems to communicate to people. But that's not to say that the bills are going to come. And then it will be my job and the job of others. And Republicans, some Republicans and Democrats alike, to say, this is an outdoor tradition and we are going to protect it.
And that kind of segues into the next question is, what organization do you think would be the most effective in crafting a political messaging for the Democratic Party, with the caveat of saying messaging that combats the crazy, dangerous liberal party?
Well, we have a lot of partner organizations that share some of our beliefs and values. And so organizations like the Montana Public Education Association, the Montana Public Employees Association, the School Boards Association, the Montana Association of School Administrators, or I think it's SAM, School Administrators of Montana. Holy cats. There are so many acronyms. I am acronym. It's wild. OMG with the acronym. There are groups like that that they have either promoted good policy for years and they have the talking points about that. They have evidence over the effect of good policy or bad policy that has passed. And so those are the groups to which we will listen pretty intently. I also hope to take some examples from other states. So, for instance, attacks on labor unions or worker protections. Wisconsin lately has had a lot of experience with bills like that. And my hope is that we can go to the Wisconsin labor groups and say, okay, you know, what was the effect of the legislation that passed? Why was it bad? How did it affect work comp and workers' rights and all the rest? And we can show why we should not do these things. And there are other examples around the country.
We're bumping up against time here, so I got a couple more quick questions. You've talked about the COVID protocols, but how do you think Montana is going to bounce back from this pandemic and the economic fallout from it?
Once we address sickness and death, then we can focus back on building our businesses, getting people back into schools and universities, and really returning to a robust economy. But the first thing is that we cannot have a population that is sick and dying. So Montana, we know what to do. We have some advantages that we are not using. We have the advantage of distances, right? We're not New York City where people are living on top of each other and, you know, there's just about nothing you can do. If you live in a high-rise apartment building, from touching the same doorknob that a coronavirus carrier has touched. In Montana, we have a bit more advantage there. I really just think that with public health protocols, getting through these winter months, which we have been told about the twindemic of COVID and flu, we've just got to get through this. I hope for more federal CARES Act coronavirus relief dollars to come. And that can be translated into unemployment benefits. And the strain on everyone for not being able to work how we usually work, or the hours we usually work, or losing a job, which means I lose my health care. I mean, we just need to get through this and get healthy. And so my hope is that we follow our public health protocols, we get our vaccines out to people, and then get through the winter months and then start to restore an economy where we can interact more fully. But we're months out from that. We're months out. And so whatever, you know, I've been doing everything I can. Every time I buy groceries, I pay $20 for the food bank. Whatever you can do to try, and as all of us together, right? Government is the word we use for the things we do together as a community, just to get through it. And I know I've touched on a lot of things. I really appreciate your indulgence, but I think that's how we do it. We respect our public health protocols. We don't get anyone else sick. We get everyone vaccinated, and then we can resume our regularly scheduled lives.
Well, that sounds nice. One more question came in, and I'm going to throw this one out because maybe ending on a more hopeful note.
Yay.
Is there any legislation that you feel hopeful about garnering broader support and potentially passing, as opposed to being mostly on a defensive mode during this session?
Yes. Yes. And thank you for the question. Whoever threw that softball right over the center of the plate, I'm just going to try and hit this one. We do a really good job at passing a balanced budget. That is our one constitutional requirement. And I am hopeful that the Republican members, a lot of whom are returning, who know a lot about the budget, this is the budget they have crafted. This is a Republican budget for the last 10 years. And so my hope is that we do not wipe the slate clean and reinvent the wheel. I hope that we continue some of the good work, and that includes school funding. I can't guarantee a tuition freeze, but I would love to see that that continues. We passed a bonding bill, so we have infrastructure projects going on around the state. We have a lot in the budget that is sound and defended, soundly defended by Republicans and Democrats alike. There are other bill proposals. So Representative, now Senator-elect Chris Pope, has a bill that would allow students to stay in public school if they hit their 19th birthday. Right now, if you started school at a certain date and a certain age and you turn 19, the school district isn't funded. It doesn't get the funding because you're not 18. So I'd like to see that changed, right? I mean, another of our House members, a Republican Geraldine Custer, was a clerk and recorder. She has brought an automatic voter registration bill that lost by one vote last session. I saw her in the hallways in the Capitol this past week. I was not there with the masses. I was there all by myself one day. And I just saw her in the hallway. She also picked an off day to go up there. And so we talked with each other at a distance in our masks. And she says she is bringing automatic voter registration back, confident it will pass. So there are good ideas, and they are coming forward. Thank you so much for the question. You've just lifted my little spirits on this Friday afternoon. There is always hope. There is always hope, everyone.
Well, perfect. Thank you so much, JP. I really appreciate it. I miss seeing you, as we all miss seeing each other. And hopefully in 2021, that will all happen again. But we really appreciate your time, your wonderful responses, whether they were positive or less positive, but realistic. And you still have a smile on your face and are hopeful. So we really appreciate that. Thank you for your service. Thank you for your work that you do on behalf of our citizens, as well as the state of Montana. Happy holidays, everyone.
You have just heard State Senator for Montana's 33rd District, J.P. Pomnikowski, who spoke at an online Friday forum about the current situation in Montana and the upcoming session of the legislature in 2021. It was recorded on December 11, 2020, and moderated by Paula Baswick. This has been a Beyond the Deep End production, produced by Joy LaClaire, for broadcast and archiving on KGVM.org, Gallatin Valley Community Radio, KGVM Bozeman.